Bonjour, with Sophie Black.
Hello and welcome back. My guest this week is the actor, writer, director, magician, Andy Nyman. He is best known for his roles on TV and film and theatre, from Kick-Ass 2 to Assassins via Fiddler on the Roof and Peaky Blinders. He's a very talented and ubiquitous performer. He's the man behind the incredibly frightening, I saw it the other week, stage show Ghost Stories, which has gone on to be a successful film. And he works quite a lot with Derren Brown. A lot of the things that may have freaked you out that Derren Brown performs, he will be the devilish mastermind behind. He's also got a very tight-knit family unit who I've always looked at from afar and thought how marvellously close and together they appear. I'll talk a bit about that in a minute. But before we get to the interview, I just wanted to say that I've now set up a Patreon page for anyone who would like to support the podcast. As my children are getting slightly older, I'm doing more and more work, and getting it done every fortnight is becoming more and more of a challenge. So help towards studio costs and the making of the thing would be hugely appreciated. Maybe one day, who knows, I'll even be able to pay my guests, which I don't. They all do it because they're incredibly nice, amazing people. If you're interested, just go and have a look at the page. It's www.patreon.com. That's Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, / the trapdoor. You'll find the link or across social media on my Instagram page and Twitter page and all of that. You'll even, if you sign up, get a free mug. Don't make me be that person who has a load of mugs in my house that no one wants. I already have a few Patreon subscribers. So thanks to Leonie and Fee, my uber diehard trailblazing Patreon supporters. You still haven't sent me your addresses, so I can't send you your mugs. I know you want one, so don't be shy. And no, honestly, it's hugely, hugely appreciated, and thank you so, so much. Anyway, back to Andy Nyman. He came in to talk to me and I started by saying how much love and appreciation I have for his amazing family, because I thought I'd start by sucking up to him. No, I didn't. But I did say that because I do think they're great. And I sort of, you know, it's the thing you want to know. It's the holy grail. You know, what do you think you did to mean that your family now seems to genuinely enjoy each other's company? So I asked him exactly that. How did you get there?
It's a very long road. I sort of marvel at it because it's half accident and half design, I think, you know. So Soph, my wife, and I are a good team as a couple. We've always bickered lots. We never really argue. Probably more because Soph doesn't like arguing as opposed to the fact I don't want to argue. But we've always bickered lots and we've never done any of those. From the minute we had kids, it was like the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
So we never did. We sort of never did any of those rules. We never did any. We certainly never decided what our modus operandi was and that we had a plan. You know, we never did the, well, if mummy said that, you know.
We
were never a team in that sort of respect. But we were just always really easygoing with the kids. And not in an. They definitely had boundaries.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It wasn't one of the. We were never those and often marvel at the, oh my God. Cut your child's hair. It's jumping up and down and screeching. And you're going, oh, darling.
Yeah.
Darling. Yeah. Please don't, darling. Whereas you want to take them out of the park, coffee shop, playgroup or whatever, saying you're not going back in until you behave.
Well, often it's a seesaw, isn't it? So it's, you know, if you've had a strict parent, sometimes you sort of think, right, I'm going to let my child, you know, have really unruly hair that gets in their eyes and makes it really difficult for them to, you know, but, you know.
But I think we're so tied up in knots about what parenting is, about the, about, you know, what you do so you don't screw your kids up and what you, you know, we know. Because they've told us, you know, here's that classic, you know, the Betjeman thing of your parents, they fuck you up.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing where we have done everything we can to give our kids, I don't mean financially a blissful, happy life, but in emotionally as safe, cozy, you know, a life as possible.
Yeah.
And yet that is now the thing that slightly fucks them up, because they've both articulated to us that it's a major anxiety for them that they won't be able to continue with the sort of, what if they have kids and they can't provide or be happy or that. Right. So you see
what if they can't give as great a thing as they've had.
Yeah.
I think. That's
or
amazing.
Do the things that we've always been able to do. And again, not financially, just in terms of the lifestyle that we've had. So one of the things, and it sounds sort of normal now, but we've always prioritised family over money.
Yeah.
And again, I'm just going to say it one more time as a headline. It's not like we're rich or ever have been rich.
Yeah.
We're both freelancers and both sort of within the arts. And Soph was working, doing sort of books for people and working in party planner stuff. But neither of us were terribly well paid. Mm-hmm. So when Macy, our daughter, was born, who's 25... Soph was the breadwinner, and I was an out-of-work actor doing the odd voiceover and magic gigs to earn money, with not huge prospects, is the truth. I mean, it was really, you know, we were sort of struggling. And Soph back then was probably earning 19,000-20,000, which was like a decent wage.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, wow, you're earning a fortune, but it was like,
livable.
That's really livable, you know. So when Macy was born, it was just like, okay, well, I'll be house husband and you'll keep working. And then I'll do the odd voiceover when Macy was a baby and she'd come with me. But I went and did all the NCT groups. I loved it. I did all of that stuff. There were no dads.
Well, this is really interesting because I've talked to a few dads recently who are starting to do that, and they've sort of saying there are a few, but it's still a bit uncomfortable and stuff like that. That must have been.
Well, I mean, but I don't. I mean, look, if they're saying that, that's the case. But I'm talking about there weren't dads in the playground. Dads didn't do pickups. And of course, there will be some who will listen to this and think, well, I, you know,
but
for the most part, this is 25 years ago. It was not the thing.
Yeah.
And I really loved it. And
was it lonely then? Therefore?
No, I loved it. I was surrounded by women, which is great fun. And shared everything in the way that, and some of those people are still really good friends of ours, you know.
Yeah.
And basically it stayed like that until it was about 18 months when Macy started not wanting Soph to leave to go to work.
Yeah.
And then it felt like, oh, well, this feels horrible now.
Yeah.
So I've just stopped. She just left work. And I said, well, I'd sort of made a commitment, which was I'll just do more kids' parties or do more this. You know, I'll just make that work a bit harder and we'll just, we'll be a team. We'll work it out. And we did, because we sort of wanted to prioritise Macy having a daughter and making that work.
Yeah.
And
I know the answer to this.
Go
but
on.
Has Soph ever regretted that? I think I know the answer to this.
Well, that's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
And it's a question that's a whole other podcast. I don't mean about Soph, about the question of women working and the implications of it, because it's massive. Did she regret leaving work? No, not for a second.
No.
Does she regret leaving work? You'd have to ask her about that. But we're at the other end of it now.
Yeah.
And there is a very definite thing that I see amongst women at the other end of it who have committed their lives to being being mums, where there's a vacuum that needs to be filled.
Yeah.
And that's not because your kids are leaving home, because fuck me, I feel that. It's, you know, the empty nest thing is beyond nature's cruel. It's agony. But the idea of, well, what do I do with my life now if all you've done is been a mum? Now, we've had a very different lifestyle from that, and we have always done bits and bobs and worked. And, But nevertheless, it's a massive, massive...
I'm going to interrupt briefly just to explain that if we can hear the bouncing upstairs, that there is an acting masterclass going on. And this is obviously the stunt section.
Anyway, yes, there's lots of bouncing.
Apologies,
Yeah.
So sorry, please do continue.
No, so I think that is a very, very real question and a very real complex topic that I think about a huge amount and talk about a huge amount with Jeremy Dyson, who's my co-writer on stuff. And we talk about all of that because one of the things, it's amazing to talk about parenting because it's sort of so undervalued.
Yeah.
The idea of being... of a woman giving up work to be a mum or a dad giving up work to be a dad is like a sort of second best.
Yeah.
And it's through the looking glass.
Society sees it as that.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Whereas it is the most important job in the world.
And the most fulfilling. I mean, in many ways.
Of course. And it's, but everything's complicated, you know, and you pay a price. But you pay a price for everything.
Yeah, and also I think...
I just realised, is this supposed to be a funny podcast? Because I'm not, funny.
This is great. but I think a lot of what... a lot of it is also not as clear as going, you know, an actress David works with, who's got slightly older children, said to me recently... It was funny, actually, because it stayed in my head because she said... Oh, it's so good that you're at home with the kids. I really regret not doing that with my kids. And in my own insecure self, I was thinking, why does she mean, you know, I do work? You know, does she think I'm not, you know, and then I'm like, oh, she must think I'm just, you know, useless at home. Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, hang on a second. I have chosen to spend half, you know, I do spend a lot of the time with the kids, but I do also work. And for me, it's not straightforward. It's like kind of, greedily want to do both.
Yeah.
You know, I do want to work a bit because I feel like I'd go a bit mad if I didn't.
Yeah.
But I do really want to look after my kids. But then either side of that, I feel like, oh, am I not doing that enough? Or are they thinking I'm not doing that? You know.
Well, it's really hard stuff. And it's really, look, it's really hard for a man to pass opinions on this because, you know, fuck off. What do you know about it? You know, ultimately. Well, but I think it's really, really complicated. And I feel sorry for women that want to be mums.
Mm-mm.
Because precisely what you've just described is this feeling of looked down on.
Yeah.
A bit like, you're a rich bitch, you can afford to do that, how lucky for you. Or no concept of actually what it's costing you to do that or why you would choose to do that. But it's the same for dads, you know. Yeah. It's just fewer because of we haven't progressed to that place yet.
Yeah.
But look, I'm going to be really, really honest. I'm saying that with a politically correct hat on because I want to sound politically correct. I think it's a really massive question, which is, you know, I'm saying we haven't progressed to the place where, you know, men and women both parent. It's a huge question, all of that stuff.
Yeah, and it does come from society. I was talking to Danny Robbins, who was saying that before he had his kids, he said there were lots of sort of bad dad examples who would say things like, oh, it's great because you know Mary's been amazing and I sleep in the spare room because obviously I've got to work and she's, do you know what I mean? And he's like, you know, my life really hasn't changed at all. And he was like, hang on, it shouldn't be like that. And I think that's the thing, and I wonder if that's informed your parenting throughout, that being with your baby all the time and actually having to kind of meet her needs, which as a, you know, up until 18 months, I mean, and onwards, but, you know, really kind of intense, you know, the feeds and the nappies and the demands, you know, that's hard work, that's labour.
It is hard labour.
And that must be so integral in the closeness that you have and the understanding that you have because you've gone through all that stuff.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I can't get my head around that man bullshit, though, anyway.
No, yeah.
I can't get my head around the idea of, you know, that's something for the little lady. You know, or it kills Soph and I when we hear people say, mums do it as well. Oh, cannot wait for the summer holidays to be over.
I know.
It literally was, we would be in tears at the end of the summer holiday when it's like, oh, okay.
I know.
You know, every one of that, but we haven't even got on to our second child yet. You know, when we were three, when Macy was three, we had a son, Preston, who then... You know, because then you've got that whole other thing of a second child. And I had proper fear about that, going into that, because you sort of know, well, I can only talk for myself. I knew how much I adored Macy in a way that you've never really experienced love before.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Certainly for me, it was very different from the love of your wife or whatever.
Yeah,
here's the child.
Yeah.
It's like this door opens up inside you where you're like, oh, my God,
yeah,
this is extraordinary. It also was a massive thing for me. In literally the minute Macy was born, I relaxed about my parents dying. I was so babyish about it before. I was literally, if people, films with it in or people talking about it, I was like, no, they can't even consider.
Your parents hadn't died.
They were alive then.
Right, okay.
My mum's still alive, thank God. My dad isn't. But the sort of circle of life thing, I suddenly felt like that was a very sort of, it just happened. I really felt that. But then when...
I think that's, I mean, my mother had died by the time I had children, but I think that is one of the most core initial feelings was, for me, that made that, squared that circle in a completely different way.
Yeah.
But yes, it is. It's the next stage of life, without being as very obvious, isn't it? But
well, it is, but it was a real surprise.
Yeah.
Because you can articulate those things previously and sort of think, oh, well, I wonder if that makes a difference. But, you know, the idea of, oh, my God, here's a little bit of, you know, in your case, here's a little bit of my mum who's back on earth, you know, because, you know, irrespective of what your spiritual beliefs are, a bit of the DNA that's continued.
Well, this is the thing, I've said this a few times and I love this fact, is that you're, one of the first things you grow as a female are ovaries. So I read this book when I was pregnant. I didn't read it, actually. There was one little box every day that would go, this week, your baby is growing fingernails or whatever, and I loved it. And very early on, this week, if your baby is a girl, she will be growing ovaries. And it's really early. It's like 6 weeks or something.
Wow.
And so therefore, my daughter's... So hang on. Yeah, so my ovaries... So my, in a sense, my daughter was in my mother's womb because I had ovaries inside my mother's womb. So even though she's never met my mother, there was a part of her in
there. Wow, that's quite a thought.
That's quite cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay.
That's quite a thought.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
It is. And then... So with Preston, when she was pregnant with, when Soph was pregnant with Preston, I very definitely had concerns about what if I don't love this baby as much? Because how could I?
Yeah.
How could I love it as much as I love this person, this child?
And did you?
Well, it's taken
such
20...
Such a sad story.
Yeah. I did, but I definitely at first, it's strange.
Yeah.
I really found it strange. I'm sure not everybody does. I'm sure it's different for everyone. But it is strange that suddenly here's another child. And but then very quickly you realise, holy shit, that the extra love door...
has just swung open.
And revealed a whole other capacity that just felt, how is that possible?
That a few people have spoken about, and I've definitely felt that I went through a sort of almost grief with the second child being born. Not obviously them being born, but more a grief for what was before, which was you and your first child, and kind of knowing what that was. And then you sort of, I definitely, well, mine were quite close together, so I felt sort of guilt as well. But it was a sort of, a strange, it was very different.
I never had that.
Oh, right, okay.
Never had that.
Yeah.
That's not to belittle it. Yeah, yeah. That's not, sure. No, shut up, that's
okay,
rubbish.
Whatever.
No, no, but I think everyone has their own versions, yeah, and that's yeah. what that's why there are 20 million books yeah, on yeah, it yeah, all, yeah. which, and everyone's got a different opinion, and every single one of them makes you feel inadequate.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So why bother? Just that was the greatest advice anyone gave us, was just buy one book.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like, I think the one we had, I think Soph's sister was working for Dorling Kindersley, and right. there was a sort of very practical, you know, how to be a parent.
Yeah, right.
You
know, this is a nappy.
Exactly. Yeah, from yeah, naught yeah. to three.
Yeah.
And we had that. And that was basically it.
Yeah.
And it was such great advice, that.
Yeah. Have you noticed, you know, you obviously, you know, people of all ages and all yeah. kids and whatever. Have you, what differences have you noticed in the way people approach parenting since you've been a parent?
Well, the biggest thing, I am so grateful to the fact we were not around with our babies with iPhones and iPads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It blows our minds that.
Yeah, yeah.
It absolutely blows our minds that you see it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, instead of it being a little book or a... I sound ancient, don't I?
No.
But clearly, look at the, you know, my kids' generations. They're a mess. And part and parcel of that social media and part and parcel yeah, of that yeah. is the dependency on phones. I'm guilty of it. The idea that that becomes the nanny as opposed
yeah,
to
yeah, yeah.
being at home and popping a cartoon on or reading yeah, a book or, yeah. you know, giving them a toy in the pram. I mean, babies.
Yeah.
Babies yeah, 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 with yeah. Being given their iPads yeah, with their, yeah, or crying yeah. for the iPad yes, and getting yes, it yes. for the get. I mean, it blows my mind. So I see that and that. But we've always, you know, it was the same when years ago we were on holiday as a family. We've only ever been on holiday yeah. as family, honestly. And I think the one time, because I think sometimes my mum's slightly done the sort of, now I think it's very important that you and Sophie go away and
get
have
some time away.
Time away. And we literally, if Why? We've ever done it, we've done it like twice. And we just sit there thinking, oh God, I wish the kids were here.
Yeah,
not
because
yeah, yeah.
we get
well, on
they
great.
Love that. Yeah. And they look,
Sophie,
yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
not like we sit there thinking, I hate, can't bear to be with her.
No.
And she, you know, yeah, it's not yeah, that. Yeah. We have a great time together, but we just miss them so much.
Yeah.
So we were on holiday. And again, not some crazy highfalutin super duper place, but we were at this place and it had a lake by the window. It was in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And this lake was called something like the Lake of Dreams or something. Mental. And every 10 minutes out of this lake would appear something. Now, when I say something, I mean it would be a 90-foot dragon that comes out the water blowing fire. Then
of
that
course.
Would sink back into the water.
Yes.
Then the next thing would
because
be...
Because it's right in the middle of Vegas.
Right in the... Yeah, right Amazing. In the middle of Vegas. I don't even know if it's still there. And there was a table next to us. And there was a family there, none of whom were talking to each other. And both kids... were given mini DVD players. So they were sitting watching whatever they
yeah,
were watching
yeah, yeah.
whilst to your left,
it's like a
giant
dragon
mechanical eagle was spitting gold coins out to, you know, the most ridiculously opulent, awe-inspiring thing you've ever seen. No.
Wow.
And we always think of, and we'd see that in restaurants all the time.
Yeah,
as people do
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So, God, it's hard not to sound snotty, isn't it? And sort of, we did it right, they did it wrong. But that was the start of your question, is what do we think we've done
yeah.
right? And I think that the thing, we've always just tried to have a good laugh and
yeah.
try, but always, we've never done that adult type thing. We live in a little flat.
Yeah, yeah.
So the idea of, you guys go to the back room while me and mummy have a serious talk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just never happened.
No, yeah.
So the kids, whenever we had people come over for dinner or come over for, the kids were always around.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, not in some horribly precocious.
No.
They've just always been surrounded yeah. by adults and artists and
yeah.
I guess interesting people.
Yeah. I think that's, I remember, I guess when I first met your kids, they would have been about 5 years ago, maybe.
Right.
But I remember thinking that my, different. My mum was single, so for a different reason. It was, we were all, well, maybe she'd have been like this anyway, but we were kind of part of her social life.
Yep.
So her friends would come over and we'd all kind of have dinner. And I think there's a real value in, as you're growing, because I look back on it, I know a lot of those adults now.
Yeah.
And I was talking to one recently who I hadn't seen for years, and I was like, was I irritating? Like, was it irritating having a 15-year-old at the table? You know, she was like, but she was quite honest. She was sort of like, occasionally, yeah, but it was quite nice to get that fresh, you know, even if you kind of would go, well, that actually, what you don't understand is this, that all this side of it. But it was so good for me just to be listened to, just to be, you know, and that's what I've always felt, knowing your children a bit older, but it's kind of like, we're part of this and we've got something to say, and therefore the ease and the confidence, the maturity that comes from that, and the confidence, more, you know, more than anything.
But it feels like,
it's just gorgeous.
Well, thank you. But it does feel like, actually it's a ridiculous sweeping statement to say it, but a sort of not an English way to be brought up. It feels like more of a European way to be brought
maybe,
up. Which is that you're all together and you're all eating together and you're with the other adults all talking and listening and kibitzing and laughing together. And and I wasn't brought up like that. I was brought up in a very traditional way. You know, my dad worked. My mum was a housewife. She brought up three kids. Unbelievable hard work.
Yeah.
Dinner was on the table at 6 o'clock when my dad got home, or 6:30, and we'd all sit and eat together. And we'd go to bed and mum and dad would stay. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. It sounds like we're some kind of loosey-goosey, you know, and the kids were up till 4 a.m. and they'd fall asleep.
Yeah.
They went to bed.
Yeah.
They behaved well.
Yeah.
If they didn't, they'd be sent out or we'd tell them off.
Yeah. Well, it's a fine line, isn't it? Because actually that doesn't necessarily work either, because actually, I think kids are more comfortable when they do have some boundaries. They know where they are, you know, so it's like, it's that balance. I think often I know someone who's very much the kind of like kid wild hair, everything is very untempered. Yeah. And I look at that and think, I wonder whether you'll be, it feels like this is not necessarily a calming environment to be around, because everything's different every day and wild, and he shouldn't necessarily, age three, be calling the shots kind of thing. But you know,
but we were also we just always did great stuff together.
Mm.
So we'd always go to the theatre together, and not just like baby theatre, you know, we'd go to roughly appropriate theatre for their age, but you know, they always behaved well and responded to it. Yeah. So
when did you start taking them?
Oh, well, they used to go to, you know, the Lyric Hammersmith used to do brilliant Saturday morning kids stuff. So they'd start going to that. We'd always go to that with them because it was a big part of mine and Soph's life.
Yeah.
And then when we knew really early on that they just would sit and listen, you know, so then.
And of course, they're now both actors.
They are both actors, and veterans of the theatre. But, you know, they were seeing, I think Preston saw Death of a Salesman when he was 5 or 6.
Really?
And of course, there are things they're not, going to understand.
Yeah.
But equally, there was something, you know, and you'd see a bit of eye rolling when you turn up with the kids, as if, oh God, well, you know, they're going to be making loads of noise and stuff. And, but they were always perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds mad to say perfect, but they responded to being treated like grown-ups.
Yeah.
And really liked that. There's a difference between sticking CBeebies on and giving them a computer
Yeah, definitely.
That's an inch from their face and they're interacting with it, there's something, and I'm sure lots of people...
Oh, 100%. Because also there's not the communal thing. So if my kids are watching TV, say,
yeah,
they're watching it together.
Yeah.
So sometimes they will... It won't surprise you to know that my kids watch a lot of Disney films.
Of course. Bravo.
And,
yeah.
And what happens is, what happened yesterday, The Incredibles gets turned on. They're both glued to it. They're almost 3 and 4. Within 8 to 10 minutes, they're playing The Incredibles and he's Mr. Incredible and she's Elastigirl. And it's going on in the background, but they're starting their own thing. That is it's almost like a kind of shoehorn into imaginary play, and it's amazing, it's brilliant, you know. But if they were sitting there, and they both have the things that they prefer, but if they were sitting there on separate devices looking at that, it would just be completely shut away from the rest of the room and the world, and but possibly at that age.
But then you know, it's hard, isn't it, to think why has what we've done worked, in inverted commas? I don't know. I think that there may be the sort of... But we just always enjoyed it, tried to enjoy each other's company.
I also like your point of, like, even that your kids are going, but how are we going to replicate this with our own kids?
I know.
You know, it's like, well, does that then make you think...
I wish we'd have given you a shit alive.
Yeah, exactly. God,
well,
so
you just sort of...
No, but does it make you think, look at your own, how you were parented, and think, you know, did you have... I mean, I know before I had kids, I had issues with things my parents did.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I had kids, I was like, oh, I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
They did their best, and, you know, and does it make you easier on your parents, or were you pretty easy on them anyway, or...?
I don't know how easy on them I was. I think I was, what a blessing to be able to say I had a really, really happy childhood. I mean, it's the greatest thing in the world. The greatest gift in the world to be given is that. To have been born in a country that's safe, thank God.
Yeah.
And to have had parents who loved you and took care of you and respected you. I mean, it is the greatest thing in the world. So I am so incredibly grateful to my mum and dad. But the drinking and the violence. But of course, the stuff that drives you a bit mad.
Yeah.
In the way that, you know, we already know that we piss our kids off and they laugh at us behind our backs, as they should do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because me and my sister still laugh about my mum and we still do impressions of my dad and, you know, embarrassing things they did or said.
Yeah.
It's right that you do that. But, I mean, I sort of think my folks did an amazing job, actually. You know, because unbelievably hard work from my mum. My dad was brought up in a way where they were walloped.
Right.
Absolutely. You did anything wrong. He had, you know, 10 barrels of shit knocked out of him by his dad, I think. And my dad, unbelievably impressively, decided that he would break that.
Yeah.
And again, it's hard, isn't it? Because I am not saying, it's weird, isn't it? Because I'm about to say, I'm not saying it was an abusive father. It wasn't. It was just a very old-fashioned working class way of bringing up your kids, which lots of other cultures still do.
I wonder how much, you know, you sort of think you're so informed by what society at the time thinks is the right thing to do in terms of kids. So you assume that it's not that generation were depraved. I mean, I'm talking about your father's parents, your father's dad.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
Yeah, but it's like, if that was the thing, then, you know, I know that, for instance, this is not comparable, but, you know, we did a bit of control crying with our kids to try and, like, get them to sleep and get them used to being asleep.
Yeah.
And there's lots of people go, oh, I could never do that. And it's like, well, we had two babies and we'd have killed it.
Just to be clear, that's leaving them cry, go back in after two minutes, go back in after 4 minutes.
Yes, so it's like, it's really, it's just, the idea is, it's teaching them to self-soothe. So it's teaching them to get themselves so they don't need to be lying with you or having you say. And as David would readily tell you, I still can't quite do that. And they still come into our bed and I still sing to them together.
They should.
And they should.
They should.
And whatever.
This, we tried
it. Do you hear this, David? Do you hear this?
We tried it once on my insistence when we had Macy. I was like, okay, I've read this stuff. Let's do it. Let's try it.
Yeah.
Let's leave her. We'll leave her for a minute crying in her bed and then we'll go back. So she knows.
Yes.
All you have to do is you touch them on the chest and they know you're there and you love them. Then you go out for 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck me. After about 9 minutes, I was in pieces.
Oh,
I was like,
horrendous.
We can't.
Well, see, this, I can see both sides of this. So we did that and actually it did work and it saved us. You know, we had kids a year apart.
Oh, my God.
I literally don't know how we could have done it if we hadn't had at least one of them for quite a chunk of it being able to go to sleep. And but that was hard earned. And the reason it reminds... And also, I've totally gone back on it now because I'm like, oh, well, they're older. And yes, you can come into our bed. And David's going, really? But that feeling... When I can hear them crying in the other room and I'm having to just stop myself from going in, and 2 minutes is a fuck of a long time, you know, and was so painful that I wonder if a lot of these parents who were hitting kids back in whatever, you know, were kind of doing it because they thought, oh, this is the right thing for my kid.
Well, you're told it's right thing,
exactly.
Aren't you?
And
you
they're not all animals.
Not at all. But, you know, firstly, that's the other thing. Our kids just slept with us.
Yeah. I mean, it's
until
so
they didn't
nice.
Want to.
Yeah.
I miss it.
What do you mean?
Yeah. Until it was like, they were, oh, God. And occasionally, you know, occasionally Mace will still snuggle up with us. Not sleep with us, but, you know, if she doesn't live with us now, but if she's at ours and she'll sort of, you know, sit on the bed. I mean, it's just the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah, if you want to cry, it's so
lovely. It's the greatest thing in the world. They just both slept with us like monkeys.
Yeah.
In terms of the hitting thing, I think that, well, you understand it, don't you? Because you're an adult and this creature is winding you up and you're sleep deprived, you're knackered, you've been wiping their shit up and you're not getting...
And it was done to you.
Yeah.
So that
and it's just like,
it feels...
oh my, I am at breaking point here. Well, so you understand why if they then decide they're going to do something bad, one little hit
will stop it.
Does it?
No.
It doesn't work.
No,
of course it doesn't work. We know it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it might work in the very short run, but that's more about you than them.
I cannot
get my head around seeing parents. I actually, in fairness, I have not seen a parent slap their child for donkey's years. But, you know, it's our standard joke, isn't it? When you were a kid, you know, you... Do not cross the road when. But yeah, we only got hit once. My dad hit us once when we were kids.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, it wasn't even a proper hit. It was, we'd all driven them absolutely mad. And that, you know, and I know he was really upset when he did it.
It's the direct opposite of what you're talking, well, how I see a lot of what works in your family is that if you are an adult hitting a child, it's exerting an unfair power advantage over your kid in terms of physical, like it's like that ends that conversation and that ends that thing. And I'm not saying you can't, you know, you do need to, you know, be strict with your kids, but equally that is too much. And
I
think often, you know, when it happens in anger, when it happens because actually you've lost it, not because you're kind of going. Because actually, even when you're irritated with your kids, you're able to go, no, I've told you can't have this thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to change. If you keep asking me, da, 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 you can have this, you know.
But
hitting them is not going to
make any difference. It's so hard because your options run out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you either become one of those parents who's constantly reasoning with their children, which is getting nowhere because you can't reason with them.
No.
Or you try and punish them and, you know, it slightly breaks your heart to do it and off they go and that's not really working because... Yeah. Or you, what are your options? It's hard. It's not like there's one sort of cut and dried, you know. And I guess that's part of where your dad voice comes in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you find yourself barking or shouting or just, you know.
I find it really difficult at the moment with Zach because he's hugely hugely sensitive, but can be quite tough as well. So he'll kind of.
I wonder who he gets that from.
Yeah, I know. I know. And he goes up to somebody and usually his sister. It could be somebody in the playground. He goes, no, that's my slide or something. And he might hit them. Mm. So I will come in and be, Zach, you cannot hit people. Can you say sorry? Da, da, da.
Yeah.
And then he'll burst into tears because he doesn't want me to be cross with him. And it's this weird thing where it's like, what? I don't know how to deal with this because I don't, you know, I'm not. Cross, like, I don't hate you, but I, but you need to know not to do this, But I have no idea how to deal with that. If anyone is listening and knows, please write in.
We had a hilarious thing when Macy was little, the kids were little. We were out, I think I was working or something. We were out in LA and we went to a play group with the kids, and there was a girl, a little girl, who took against Macy for some reason. And sort of went over and hit her. And we were like, oh my God, you know. And so that sort of calmed down a little bit. And then on the way out, the girl came over and hit Macy again. So we sort of said something like, don't do that. And the mum came over and went to the little girl, whatever her name was. You don't do that. Use your words. You use your words. And this girl went to Macy, I hate you. And the mum went, that's good. Well done.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That was interesting. But why do we talk about something else now?
In terms of your job, would you say that your job was conducive to parent? What have been the challenges or perks?
I've always made a massive effort to keep the family together and with me. So whenever I've been away filming, we've always worked it so the family could come out and be around. That's got harder now because of the way schooling is. You can't get time out and blah, blah, blah. It's mental. You know, I'm not saying that you should be able to just go off and go wherever you want.
No,
but
there
you
are extraordinary circumstances.
It's
where,
ridiculous. Yeah. But so they have always, we always made that work. With theatre, I have, where possible, always had them with me because I've always tried to have a dressing room that's meant my family could come.
Yeah.
So after school, homework would be done in the dressing rooms and, you know, we'd try and, or if I was working away, if it wasn't in the West End, you know, again, that we'd find time where the family could come out and live wherever I was working and be. Because I think one of the perks of being an actor is, you know, if you're doing a show in London, you've got your days free, essentially.
Yeah.
So you could do school drop-offs and you can do pick-ups and then you can go to work. It means you're not there at night time, but, you know, there's the quid pro quo on that and you can do the other stuff. You also get, you know, lots of time when you're not working, so you're around. But the downside is obviously that it's very sporadic and you can be committed suddenly to 3 months away.
Yeah.
And what the hell are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah.
How are you supposed to make that work? Well, one of the ways, thank God, is having an amazingly supportive partner. And Soph's always been absolutely extraordinary and made that work and sacrificed. I struggle with it. I feel guilty about it. And always have done. Now, equally, I've been a really good provider and I've worked really hard and made it work. But I struggle with it because I think that I don't know that it's more selfish than any other way of job, but there's something fundamentally about it being all about me mm-hmm. and my choice. But that's also given us a really exciting, happy, yeah. adventurous life that's never the same. But
and one that your kids have embraced, actually, yeah. and they've gone on to do it.
Yeah, yeah. absolutely. So I think it's not black and white. I'm grateful for the fact I wasn't enormously successful when I left drama school. I'm grateful for the fact I didn't have the career then that I have now. That's not to say I'm enormously successful, but I'm certainly very busy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I wasn't. And I wasn't for the first 4 or 5 years. And
why are you grateful for that?
Well, because I wouldn't have been a house husband.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And I wouldn't have had the amount of time with the kids I had with the kids when they were babies.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have had that bedrock of memories and yeah. fun.
Yeah.
And built on that, you know, and it's...
Do you think also that, I mean, I'd have to ask them, but that would inform... Because that is very unusual, even now, let alone 25 years ago. You know, the way you very kind of... I don't know how easy a decision it was, but it seemed that it was an easy decision where you're like, well, Soph's got this job, so I'm just going to stay at home and look after the kids. That also... In terms of something for your kids yeah. to be aiming for, it's like not only do we need to sort of create this kind of happy, respectful home, but, you know, have the equality that you...
Well, I would really struggle if... My PC head flipping on again. I was about to say, if Macy ended up with a bloke, but whatever gender they all end up
yes,
being, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they ended up with a partner... Well, no, if it's a traditional, in inverted commas, relationship, yeah. if Macy goes with a bloke who isn't open to being equal, I just think...
She won't, though.
No, of course she won't. Because also her role model is... I do most of the domestic stuff, always yeah, sort of right, have yeah. done. But I don't understand... it. For me, it was not a hard choice
no.
to be... I felt fortunate. Yeah. That how fun is this going to be that I could spend all this time with our baby? I never felt inadequate as a man. I never felt like
yeah.
that makes me a pussy because I'm not out there being the breadwinner
and
slaying dragons. You know, I just felt this is brilliant. One of the challenges that I have faced and one of the things that as I sort of became an adult, I sort of grew and realised was, how do I, as a freelancer, as an actor who has no control over his career or finances, mm-hmm. how do I create an environment where my kids can feel as loved and safe as I had
yeah.
in when I was brought up in a very traditional house where, you know, my dad was full-time
and
my mum was a housewife. That's not the life that my kids are going to have. So how is it possible to do that? And we've sort of found our version of that somehow through, as I say, happenstance as much as anything else. It's not like we sat down and talked about.
No.
I think probably the only time we talked about our parenting was trying to do that crying thing. And then you're like, no, can't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bullshit. Yeah. Not for us. Yeah, yeah.
Is there anything that anyone ever told you that you kind of look back on and think, that was terrible advice? I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't pass that on to anyone.
Not hugely, no. I can't. I mean, I wish I could come up with some phenomenally amusing answer. But they're really, we were always just so sort of, I say calm about it. I'm sure you could play footage of us as young parents that were as far away from calm as possible. But not really. The only thing I think of is good advice, which is that book thing stayed with me. Just buy one book. Just have one book. It was brilliant advice.
Yeah.
Because you're just searching for answers all the time otherwise.
Yeah. So that would be the advice you would...
Have a laugh would be the advice. Don't make problems for yourself. You know, because it is such a good laugh.
Yeah.
It is such a good laugh, including the exhaustion of it. You just have to see the fun of it as well as, you know, because otherwise it's just, and again, please God, nature's working and everything, you're blessed with health and the kids are blessed with health and everything's working the way it should. You know, we're talking about those circumstances.
Yeah.
But you can always find joy in everything, you know. But that's the thing. We were always amazed at how little fun people seem to have with their kids.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean at parties. I mean just all the time, just how hilarious the whole thing is.
Yeah. There was, I spoke to someone a few weeks ago about her, she said, say yes more and enjoy your kids. And I think sometimes that's, you know, you've got to, I can get a bit bogged down in thinking, I've got to do the washing up and I've got to,
yeah.
I've got to unload the washing machine and these, all the things I've got to tick on. And actually, if they want me to be Frozone in that moment where they're Mr. Incredible, and which I don't want to be Frozone, you know, but, you know, but I could be a better character, no.
Yeah.
But then I should just stop and do that.
Yeah, I mean, I've saved being a miserable moaner for now.
Yeah.
Which I feel myself becoming, hateful. But yeah, you should.
Yeah.
But then the exhaustion is, who else is going to wash up?
Yeah. But it's the balance, isn't it, that actually this fun, this is not, you're not going to regret doing that. You're not going to go, gosh, I wish I had done the washing up at 11 when I actually ended up doing it at 4. You know, that actually there's something to be said for, oh, there's a huge amount of sharing joy with your kids.
Oh, God. And also, don't film everything. Don't phone. Don't take. I mean, look, we've got a million. We were just at the dawn of sort of digital cameras. I mean, they sound ancient.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but somewhere on our computer are a million photos. But now the fact you have your camera with you and your video camera with you
all
endlessly.
Time,
I mean, you know, if you go to a event at a school or something, all you see are iPads that go up filming it. You're like, just watch it.
Yes, enjoy it. Be there. Be present.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a bit of advice that has been ringing in my ears since I heard it. I definitely need to be more present with my kids. Thank you so much to Andy Nyman for coming to talk to me. What a treat that was. Once again, if anyone's interested in supporting the podcast, please have a look at my Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/thetrapdoor. I also won't do this every week and have never done it before, but I feel for anyone looking for new podcasts to listen to in the new year, I have some stonking suggestions. Previous guests, in fact. So one that I have got very into in the last few months is something called Brian and Roger, that's brought to you by Harry Peacock and Dan Skinner. He was on last summer, I think. It's really, really funny, really dark, where they play sort of two middle-aged men just going about their daily life. And one of them is nice. One of them is very much not nice. So if you want to laugh your face off, listen to that. And if you want to laugh your head off, the face isn't quite enough, you want to go for the full shebang, then listen to Heavy Pencil, which is brought to you by Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner. Anna Crilly, another previous guest. It's a kind of, like, it is hilarious and also deeply uncomfortably accurate depiction of a sort of feckless agent's assistant who Anna plays. I really recommend you listen to both of those. They're both available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Next time, I will be speaking to stand-up Jen Brister about parenting twins. Until then, look after yourselves.
Bye-bye.